Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2017, episode 14. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. This is the only Husker podcast where anything goes. It all just depends on how much beer we pump through Dr. Rob tonight. Speaking of Dr. Rob, he's in the house. Good week or bad week, Dr. Rob?
Well, we didn't lose.
That's a good way to look at it. You know, you're kind of melancholy tonight. You came over to the house, you walked in, you're rather melancholy. I asked you if anything was wrong, and you're like, the Huskers just aren't doing it for me.
Well, it was, honestly, I say we didn't lose, but on the flip side, my son, I look at football from the standpoint of how did my teams, plural, do? And
Michigan State won.
Michigan State did win, which was, it had to come from behind, even.
They're 6-1.
Yeah. Spartans, baby.
Mark D'Antonio, the Big Ten Coach of the Year.
See, I still think of last year as kind of a blip on the screen. I think last year was the fluke. Coming back from it's not the surprise. Last year was one of those surprise flukes where I just think, yeah, you had a run of really good quarterbacks when they went from Kirk Cousins to Connor Cook. I mean, you had some great running backs, some very good offensive line. They kind of kept the core concept. I mean, they kind of – D'Antonio's a little Alvarez-esque in the way he does things. He kind of maintains sort of these – he's very intense about these core concepts. And it's great offensive line play. It's large, athletic – well-coached defenses. I know they lost Narduzzi, but they still have a very good defense, and that's definitely an emphasis. Special teams are an emphasis. Running the ball is an emphasis. They do the stuff that you saw that Alvarez has carried over through three different coaches since he retired, and what Wisconsin is still doing. And yeah, I knew it was going to be a quick turnaround from them. But, yeah, Michigan State lost. I'm thinking more in terms of
– the Giants?
I'm still thinking in terms of Nebraska, the Giants, and then the Omaha Westside Junior Warriors, whose season actually ended a couple of weeks ago with the win over Bellevue Man. West. But, yeah, so Nebraska didn't play. The Giants did play. That was the only team I got that really played, and they just got – smoked by Seattle. It was kind of a close game until the fourth quarter. Then Seattle just blew them open in New York.
Of course, the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up, so get your tickets or get your table now by visiting RemingtonTrophy.com, the annual event coming up on January 13th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Later in this podcast, we're going to have the Remington Trophy Watch List Spotlight. Don't forget the holidays are right around the corner. Do you have your big red presents? Get all your holiday gifts at Husker Hounds, three locations in Omaha area, and online at huskerhounds.com. If you know what you want, Scott can find anything for you. Go to huskerhounds.com. Ticket Express is the place to buy and sell Husker football and basketball tickets. Yes, basketball season just around the corner, folks. How about Monday Night Football in Kansas City, the Chiefs and Broncos on October 30th? Ticket Express has you covered and just announced today Kid Rock's coming to Omaha on March 17th. St. Paddy's Day for Kid Rock.
Nice. Soon to be your U.S. Senator from Michigan.
TicketExpress.com. He's not going to run for Senate, where no event is ever sold out.
That means that we are drinking a beer. Drink a beer, everybody.
Yes, the Infusion Brewing Company, the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. Tonight, we are drinking the Peanut Butter Stout. Now, Rob, this Peanut Butter Stout is created using 30 pounds of chocolate peanut butter. The smoothness in this black ale is unmatched. Roast is subdued to create a creamy, rich brew as it warms in the glass. The chocolate becomes even more apparent, and the peanut butter slides right into making the stout lover's dream. This is 6.7% alcohol by volume.
That's pretty smooth for that much alcohol.
No, it is a little sweet, isn't it?
It's a little sweet. You know, I kind of like it. When you said it's peanut butter stout, I didn't think I was going to like it. It reminds me a lot of the toffee bar stout. And the reason I say that, it's got sort of that burnt sugar, caramelized toffee flavor to it that I actually do really
like. Here's what I want you to do, though. Okay, I just took it out of the fridge, so it's still pretty cold. Let it warm up a little bit and see how that changes the taste a little bit.
No, I'm just going to keep drinking.
This is 7%. We're going to be shit-faced by the end of this hour.
Well, yeah, your pansy ass might be.
Well, because I don't have the stamina that you do. At least that's what my wife said. No, she did not say that. Anyway, the peanut butter stout.
She did.
From the Infusion Brewing Company, the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. And in studio tonight, I didn't make this announcement prior, and this is probably the longest he's ever had to wait to do an interview, but I wanted it to be a surprise because he no longer has an office down in Lincoln. He held it for 21 days, he had an office. Dave Remington is in the studio with us, former interim athletic director, and now he's sitting in my basement, which is really cool.
It's just as nice as my office used to be, Trav.
You know, I guess we've talked by phone and by text, but I never bothered you when you held your position. Let's go back when you got the phone call and they said, "Hey, Dave, we need some help." What was that phone call like, and did you even hesitate on taking that job?
Well, I got a call from Chancellor Green, and he said that that they were going to get they're going to get rid of Sean, and would I be interested in possibly an interim while they search for a permanent AD? I immediately thought it was some kind of a hoax, like I'm getting punked here, but it was true. And then a couple days later, he flew in, and we had a little conversation, and I said, if I can convince my boss, Boomer Esiason, then I would do it.
So go back real quick. You knew before Sean was going to get fired that he was going to get fired?
Yeah.
Wow. Because I always thought they would have made the phone call after they fired him. But so you knew something was going to go down before everything did.
Yeah.
So what was Boomer's take when you said, "Hey, this is an interim thing. Can I go back home?"
He goes, "Hey, you've been here 24 years. You're just going to pack up and leave without even I said, "Listen, I'll be back." And it took a while. It took the plane was leaving at. Oh, gosh, on Sunday, and he was doing his NFL Today thing, and I had to wait for him to get off air at 1 o'clock. I said, "Man, you got to let me know. I got to go here." And he said, "Go ahead and go." So,
wow. I mean, what was his hesitation? I mean, for all the
travel. Well, he goes, "You're not coming back." I said, "I'm coming back." I said, they'll probably ship me back after a couple of weeks. Don't worry about it.
So you arrive to lots of fanfare, and I've been wanting to ask you this. What was your two-part question? What was your biggest surprise within the athletic department? Good and biggest surprise, maybe culture-wise, bad, if there was any.
Well, this is so good. I was really not surprised, but I was. I thought it was pretty cool that Ronnie and Hank, the president and the chancellor, were so good. I mean, they were really interested in football, and they were really kind to me, and they treated me with respect, and for a guy who's never done it before, and they let me run with it. So I was really happy with that. As far as negative, you have a limited thing. Well, as an interim, you have a limited amount of things you can actually do because you don't want to go in and screw up anybody because that there's going to be a permanent guy following you. And all you want to do is keep the thing afloat and keep people happy. And, and then that's what I try to do my first few weeks there is just to go out and see the people and just reassure them that we're coming back. We will get a permanent AD and he will be good. And we'll be back to where we used to be.
What do you see going forward from an administrative support standpoint? And I guess I say that, I mean, I hate throwing guys under the bus, especially after they've retired, but you look at a guy like Perlman, and I think sort of the underlying feeling is that as long as nobody's embarrassing us on the sidelines with a bunch of yelling and screaming, no one, he didn't care how athletics at the university did. That's sort of the impression that I think you get looking from afar. Like I said, that's of Perlman. Hmm. How do you think it is now going forward? And I think that's going to be kind of a big concern for a lot of people, especially boosters, over the next few years here.
That's a good question. I mean, I probably disagree with you. I think Harvey was more into the athletics than most people think. And I think that... I think that the two new guys that we have there are that they've been there for less than a year or just over a year. They've been, I think they're both going to, they have enough going on where they don't have to have an identity being the guy that runs the athletic department. They're busy doing the academic side of that, and I think they'll let the AD do the AD job.
Speaking of the AD, Bill Moose was hired. How involved were you with that search? Were you involved at all? Did they just come to you and say, hey, we hired a guy? I mean, did they seek your input? How much were you involved in the hiring of?
Well, there was 20 people. They had an initial meeting on what kind of qualities you want the AD to have, and I was included in that 20. And then I think they had a four-person committee that actually made a selection, and I was not in that. But I got a chance to speak my mind, and it was good. And Coach Osborne was there with me, and it was pretty good. I think that I just said, here, the guy we want is a guy like the guy next to me, Coach Osborne, and that was about it. And I said a few choice other things, but that nobody needs to hear about.
I was surprised because, I mean, you listen to this podcast because you sponsor it, and we appreciate that. I've been a big proponent of you having that job on a full-time basis for a long time. You and I talked 5-10 years ago, and you'd mentioned how it was a job that interests you. On your introductory press conference, you said, I'm not interested. Why didn't you want the job full time? Or as you've been with Boomer so long, you're
well,
supposed to
retire? Well, because I seriously have been 24 years with Boomer, and I said I was going to go through it. When he hired me, it was for the long term, and I agreed. I said, well, I'm going to stick around until I turn 60 or we find a cure for this thing. So I've got 2.5 more years, and then I'll come back to Nebraska and do what I can do.
Well, and you were you surprised? I wasn't. You were well received. I mean, you've been gone a while. Yeah. You come back for your football camp. You come back, but I mean, it was like you were like Moses, the Red Sea parted.
I come back just enough so people don't get sick of me. I'm back for for a week for football camp and for the trophy event in January. It was good. All I want to do is help out. That was the main thing, and I just try to tell people that I'm not here for any other reason, because they asked me and I think I can help. So I took the job.
Yeah, I think you were a calming effect, which I think helped everybody out. I think they wanted to see somebody with Nebraska ties. They wanted to see somebody they knew. It just made them feel good. But what I liked what you did, David, I don't know if the marketing department cared, but those of us who are friends with you on Facebook, I mean, you took people inside the office. You were taking pictures.
Yeah, I did. I took the Iron End Club in there. I had like 20 people in my office, and there was a Pat Logsdon is right next door. She's seen it, and she's just shaking her head like, "What in the heck are you doing?"
I loved it, but see, that's the type of access, and it's not really access.
Well, I just kept telling myself, "Who would Bob Devaney do right now?" Because he was my favorite AD. I mean, can't say that because Tom was there. But
bust open a bottle of scotch.
Well, I couldn't do that. But no, it was. I just tried to have fun with it. I know people were really into football in Nebraska, and I was like, "Hey, I'm gonna be shake hands and tell people what I think is going to happen." And it got me in trouble a few times, but. As far as a calming effect,
How do you get in trouble as the athletic director?
Well, because you're not. I'm there for the calming effect.
Yeah, like who's ahead?
I'm there
of
for the
you?
Calming effect. Not. I think I had a calming effect on the team before they play Ohio State. That was the problem.
There's a reason he's doing the interview now and not when he was the interim athletic director, because I don't think he would have been really allowed to do this podcast, right? I mean, there's marketing stuff, and I get that. It's his exclusive.
They have. Yeah, I probably wouldn't be able to do it.
Now, people are going to want to know, did you talk to Mike Riley very much during your time?
The first week I did, and then after that I didn't really, because things got so bad down on second floor, not because of anything I said or anything, but I just want to leave them alone, let them dig themselves out of this hole that they put themselves into. And the last thing you want to do is have an interim guy looking over your shoulder. But I like Mike, and I think he's a great guy. But we simply got to get a better football team. We got to play better. And he's been around a long time, and he knows that. So me going around there, I'm not going to give him a pep talk. He's an old pro. He knows exactly what he has to do, and that's how I approached it. But I just told him, hey, I'm in your corner. I want you to do well, and I'm not here to fire anybody. So I'm hoping they can continue to. Get this thing rolling again, and because right now it's just it's pretty bad.
You mentioned the second floor. Is it pretty tense there? I mean, firing Sean, If they read the World Herald or the Journal Star, they know what's going on. I mean, are guys pretty cinched up?
I don't know. After that, I was there down there for a week. I didn't really walk through it after that. I just kind of left them alone because they had enough on their plate, and they didn't need to see.
You look at the program the last couple of years. They fired the D-line coach, the special teams coach. It's not like guys haven't been getting fired. The D coordinator. It's not like guys haven't been getting fired over the last 2 years. It's almost a routine down there to some degree. I think they'd probably have to be a little. I would think there'd be a fair degree of tenseness. Either that, or everybody would be sitting with sort of a sense of resignation.
So you mentioned you got two and a half years left at the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Mm-hmm. You're going to move back to Omaha or to Lincoln or somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. Would you like to be involved with the university when you retire from New York?
Yeah, I mean, I love my 3 weeks as an AD. I don't see myself being an AD, but I'd like to do something with the university.
Like just consulting or advisory committee?
As a consultant, yeah, that would be really nice. I just don't know if that's going to happen, and I'm not planning on it for sure.
But as long as you can continue to travel, right? I mean, that's the big deal.
You know what? When push came to shove, I was like, man, this job, you don't get to travel at all unless it's West Lafayette. I go, you know, it sounds a lot better than it is. I tell you, I've been to West Lafayette before as a coach with Wisconsin, and there's not much there.
Yeah, and you're getting ready to go, what, Antarctica is the next big trip?
Yeah, January 20th, I'm going to head down to Buenos Aires and take a cruise ship down to Antarctica.
So that will be your seventh continent then?
That will be my seventh continent.
Wow.
93 countries. Hey, that's pretty good.
93?
93, yeah.
Now, when you go to your office or your house, do you got like a pin map or anything? Like, do you keep?
I have something online.
Do you?
Yeah, it's like my father had.
Now,
my father had the travel trailer with all the little
stickers.
Details on it,
the stickers.
And I have an online map that shows me where to go.
Is it public or is it just for you?
It's just for me.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, I thought I only had 70, and I started counting all the Caribbean,
islands,
and it was up to 93. I said, wow, that's pretty good.
Nice. You want to hang out for the rest of the podcast?
Sure,
you just want to hang?
Sure.
We got listener email coming up. We got a whole bunch of stuff. But, of course, right now it's time for the
feel free to chime in if you have an opinion.
Yes,
so.
We like opinions.
It's not as
I've been studying volleyball and the other sports. It was funny. The first
rifle?
Volleyball. The
rifle?
rifle and bowling, too. They got all kinds of sports there. The first volleyball game, I thought, like I'm thinking back when I was in high school, the only time you could score is when you served, you know. And I'm like, it's over 21. People looking at me like, what's wrong with you? But I tell you, the volleyball team's got it going on. That's a fun place to go.
What, ranked seventh in the country now? You know, I haven't been there since.
And this is supposed to be a down year. Yeah. This was supposed to be a rebuilding year.
Do you guys think that they could have like an exhibition game and fill up Memorial Stadium for one game? Think about that.
If they publicized it for a while.
I mean, it would be a one-time effort.
They could pack it in. They could pack it in.
You've got people going filling up for the spring game, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know if they'd sell it out, but I could see them putting 50,000, 60,000
in. I tell you, the people that go to those games, they're pretty rabid fans.
They are.
Here's why I think it would be. You know, Iowa did this a couple years ago with wrestling. They put the wrestling mats in Kinnick Stadium.
Now that's a whole nother level of fandom when you talk about the state of Iowa.
No, I get that, but I think they had 40 or 50,000 for a wrestling meet inside Kinnick Stadium. So,
which is unheard of, unless it's like the Olympics.
So bringing up your idea, I think you could probably get 60.
Why not do that?
Yeah. I mean, now, weather's a big deal.
And there's that. Everybody gets an umbrella.
Apparently volleyball players don't like rain.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
did you talk about that with John Cook?
I didn't. I thought about it, though. I go, you know what? Because I think it's like 8,000, 9,000 people. I said, we could blast out six games worth of attendance in one game and do it as an exhibition, and people would come. They're crazy about the volleyball.
Well, and here's what would, because it would be, if you only did it one time, it'd be a spectacle. It'd be like the cool place.
It would be like the hockey series where they play in stadiums. And I'm thinking, well, this is kind of like our hockey. Let's do it, you know. But
I like the idea.
You know, it could happen.
Man.
The weather things, that's why P.T. Barnum, you know.
you don't have the retractable dome.
That's right.
Well, so you can't do
that. And then there's that. You know, they didn't think of the whole thing through, but –
Time now for the Remington Trophy Watch List Spotlight. Billy Price from Ohio State, he's 6'4", 310 pounds, senior, making the switch from guard to center this season. Get this, Price is a returning first-team All-American and All-Big Ten Conference performer who will be one of the top centers in the country this year, and he is. He's following the trail blazed by 2016 teammate Pat Elflein, who, oh, by the way, won the Remington Trophy a year ago. Of course, he moved from guard to center. Price has started every game the past three seasons, including 2014 campaign when Ohio State won the inaugural college football playoff national championship. He is an unquestioned leader on the offensive line that returned four or five starters from a year ago. He already graduated, Rob, in 2017.
Smart kid.
Yeah, degree in business administration with a specialization in operations management.
So the guy's a three-time academic all-conference guy.
And he's a first-team All-American.
Four-year starter. This guy started as a full-time starter as a
redshirt. He's a center. He's a center, guys.
They're all good.
But Dave, you were a center the entire time, right?
Yeah.
We see a lot of guys now who start
at
as
one
guards
spot, move
and then
to
move
the
guard.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why are there not like 4-year centers anymore?
That's a good question. I don't know about that one. That's but it's a great skill to have to be able to play more than one position, especially if you want to go pro, because they require guys who can play up and down the line. And what hurt me at the end of the day was that I was a strictly center, and I couldn't play. I could play a little guard, but I didn't have the range. I didn't have the height for all that. So,
see, I think you see a lot of these guys where you look at Ohio State last year. You had Pat Elflein, who was the Remington Trophy winner last year at Ohio State. I think he was just that much a little bit better than Price at the center position. You got Elflein starting at center. He's gone. The logic has always been amongst coaches, you put your best guy at center. Now, I think there's a lot of theory you put the best guy at offensive tackle, but it's more of a you put.
I think it depends on kind of offense you run, but
but you put the best tackle at left tackle.
What they used to say is the center is always at his point of attack is always a center, and everybody else he's backside, front side, but center is always on point of attack. You're always right there in the middle of everything. So
I just thought it was interesting because every time we read one of these or do a spotlight. Started a guard or started a tackle and made the move. I don't think we've seen a 4-year center guy for a long time. The guy from Clemson, I think, might have been a 4-year center guy, but
I'd have to double check. Alabama? He started 1 year. He spent 1 year where he started his freshman year. He started a few games at guard, actually. I think you see a lot of situations where guys are like this at Ohio State, where you got one guy who is just little more experienced, mainly more than anything, is your starting center. He graduates like Elflein did at Ohio State. The coaches look around and go, okay, we just had an All-American graduate at center. Where do we have another best offensive lineman? Who's the next best offensive lineman? I think smart coaches move those guys to center.
Don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 13th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Dave will be there. All his buddies will be there. Lots of NFL guys. We've said it before. It is the premier event to be at. It just is. And if you need tickets, you need a table, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Real quick, Dave, because a lot of people may not know how you select it. You have a pretty easy process on how your winner is selected. No voting. It's just very, very simple.
Yeah. Well, we've got three All-American teams that we use, and whoever's consensus of those three All-American teams, that's who's the winner.
Now, what are the three? I mean, I assume coaches,
Sporting,
AP.
Sporting News, coaches, and AP, yeah.
Okay, so Sporting News is the third.
Mm-hmm. So get to the event. Rob and I, are we going this year? Or are we?
Sure,
okay.
You're always invited. Come on.
I know.
You're almost required. We're going to do a live podcast right there.
See, when I was a kid, I think all of us on some level, we were fans before we were players, and you go to these events. It's an absolute who's who of college and NFL football. It's such a great event.
I don't know if you know yet. Do you know who the Gerald Ford Award winner is? Can you announce that yet? No?
Not yet.
You've been busy the last month, haven't you?
I got a lot of things to do in the next couple of months.
So, no guest speaker yet. It's all right.
I heard you're open. I hope you're open. I mean, get you guys up there.
No, we're... No, you got who's your MC? What's his name?
Aaron Davis.
Yes. You can just let him
talk. Yeah, Aaron's been with us for like 10, 12 years, maybe even longer than that. Great, great MC.
Yeah, he's enthusiastic. I love him because I'm getting to the point where I can start to imitate him. Ladies and gents. Ladies and gents. He's a good guy.
He's great. He's great. I love him.
He's a good Lincoln High grad.
Yeah. So the Huskers on the road this weekend, and I can't believe it, but I'm going to say this, and I think a lot of people were shocked when it happened. Not that we pay attention to Vegas or not, but they are an underdog to Purdue. That shocked a lot of people.
Do you want to know what's interesting is the fact that
Purdue just lost to Rutgers.
There was all of this talk about how Nebraska was, what was it, a 24-point dog to Ohio State.
Yeah.
That this was just an absolute travesty that we would be a 24-point underdog to anybody. This seems to bug people more. I think I've talked to more people who are bothered by the fact that we're nearly a touchdown underdog to Purdue as opposed to being a 3-plus touchdown underdog to Ohio State.
Are you bothered by it? I was shocked that they were an underdog to Purdue.
I was not shocked, but yeah, I'm bothered by it.
Dave, you're chuckling.
I'm just going to leave it alone.
No, I get that. But, you know, we sat at Shucks yesterday, and by the way, whenever Dave's in town, you go to Shucks.
I know, but you didn't get to have any of the oysters.
I did that
just specially for you.
I know. I had to work.
Work prevents you from eating oysters?
I know. But you were optimistic yesterday because you were talking with your buddies. And your buddies weren't that optimistic.
No.
And were very optimistic.
I said, we're gonna beat them straight up.
Was Felice there?
Bingo! Ding, 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 ding. No. No. We'll leave that one alone, too. No, it's all good stuff.
You were optimistic. And I can see the sincerity in it.
Because we have to win. We simply have to win. So I'm hoping that we'll get the best effort we've had all year from our team, and they'll go down there and they'll beat them and we'll get some momentum going.
You know, you just did say it's a must win.
It is. It is for it is.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. Okay.
There's no other way you look at it.
I don't know if you can answer this. This might be a question that you're just another one of those. Yeah, I'm not touching that one. Mm-hmm. If they lose to Purdue. Because I'm looking at the
can tell you right now, and I'm not answering this
one. I'm looking at the schedule here, because if they lose to Purdue, Northwestern's a better team than Purdue.
I don't know. Purdue's a much improved team, but when you go lose to Rutgers.
I said Northwestern's I think better Purdue's team a tough than Purdue.
They're tough at home. I think Purdue's.
Northwestern beat Iowa, dude.
Iowa sucks.
No, they really don't. I did. They really don't.
Horrible offensively. It was one of the worst offensive called games I've seen in a long time. It was brutal.
I don't think they're a bad team. Just saying. I think Northwestern's better than Purdue. I think if they lose to Purdue, I think they lose to Northwestern. Crap, I think then they lose to Minnesota.
Come on.
I think they lose to
crap up there if not working. Minnesota's no good.
Yeah, they're really not that good. Okay, so they beat Minnesota. They're going to lose. They're going to lose in Happy Valley.
Yeah, I would say that. That's pretty safe.
I think Iowa's a wash.
I think they beat Purdue. I think they beat Northwestern. I think they beat Minnesota, and I think they beat Iowa.
You think they're going to go 4-1?
I do. And everybody thinks I'm the Husker hater. Everybody thinks I'm the Mr. Negative. I got him at 4.
You had him 10 wins before the season.
I did.
I know you did. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, who had the more realistic prediction there, Travis? Yeah.
I know. It's not all and
it's not over with yet.
Yeah, you need momentum. You just need to block the outside stuff. And just, okay.
Let me ask you this.
Four games I just picked, are they winnable? Absolutely.
They are winnable. Hey, let me go back to my question of Dave here real quick.
I know nothing.
Let's say they lose to Purdue. And let's say it's not a – I mean, I'm not talking one of those like Illinois and Riley's first years where they lose on a last-second touchdown pass. Let's say Purdue comes out and just straight up beats them. Does Riley get fired before the season's over?
I don't think so.
what's the point of firing a guy before? I've never understood that. I've never understood
the old. For the most part, I don't either, other than it allows you to officially start a coaching search. You can start looking. Let's the job's open.
You don't think they're looking now.
I am backing away from this question.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think they are. You know, I think they are, but now becomes official. I think the recruits know there's going to be a change. And sometimes that's not a bad thing.
No,
I think everybody's like, holy crap, we're going to lose these recruits.
Saying.
I don't think they've got as many recruits on the hook as people think they do.
I think it's everything's in a holding pattern. I think you've got a lot of different things that go into this, but I would believe that once you know and that you're going to make a change, whether that be after the season.
Okay, or how's this? I'm going to ask this of our interim athletic director. Go ahead, Travis.
I think you start the planning process and making the phone calls. I mean, Dave was hired as interim athletic director before Sean Eichhorst was even fired.
If Mike Riley loses to the Purdue Boilermakers, now the beer's hitting me.
If you're going to ask these tough questions, I might need a growler of that stuff too.
Oh, the Fusion Brewing Company.
It is delicious.
Remington Doc podcast.
All right. I get it. I guess my only point is
who would you have take over?
Well, and that's a great question because I don't have any faith in the coordinators myself.
So there you go. There, you answered your own question.
That's just me.
You answered your
Dave own question. Dave has a lot of faith. I have slightly less.
I have a lot of faith in everyone.
So the Huskers, an underdog at Purdue. Purdue, are you surprised by their turnaround? A new offense, they throw the ball over the place.
I really wasn't because they were one of those teams that, they knocked off Nebraska 2 years ago. And they've shown potential. This is one of those teams that I always thought they had some athletes there. I thought they were, was it Hazlitt?
Or Hazel.
Hazel, thank you.
Hazel, one of them.
I thought Hazel was incredibly undercoaching these guys the last few years.
I mean, his best win was Nebraska, 2 years ago?
It was, but I thought they were a tremendously undercoached group of athletes. I thought these were some guys that had some potential.
So, there you go. Nebraska, Purdue, this weekend, drink another beer, and let's now get to listener email. Listener email has been very popular. If you got an email question that you want to ask Dr. Rob, send it to doctalksports@gmail.com. That's doctalksports@gmail.com. You can also send it via Twitter.
And our guy Jeff in Austin says we didn't answer any of his emails last week.
That's not true.
Was Jeff the one that had like the big rambling where it was like the multi-point one? He said we didn't answer him. And I'm sitting there going, I think we addressed all of these. We didn't really answer him, but we discussed all of them.
Here's the deal. If you make like a statement, that's not a question. Yeah. If you end it in a question mark, that is a question.
It's almost more a case of we may not have answered the question,
like
but we allow
question. Keep it to, you know, 160 characters or whatever Twitter is.
Yeah, we allowed him to like set the outline for the entire discussion, basically.
All right, so Dick writes in. Seems to me that Nick Gates is the poster child for the absence of player development under Riley. When Gates came to Lincoln, he was going to be the next big thing. At the beginning of the season, one of the pundits opined that he might develop into a serviceable tackle in his junior year. It hasn't happened. If Riley's given a fourth year, he needs at minimum to get rid of Kavanaugh and the strength and conditioning coach, whoever that is. Thoughts, Dr. Rob? As you pour a beer.
He's pouring a beer. I can tell you right now, I'm not going to touch this one either.
And that's fine.
I'm leaving this thing. I might leave the whole premises.
I thought about asking Dave's opinion of Kavanaugh.
I am not.
I don't know what's happening with Gates. Gates was the guy that...
You ripped Gates last week.
I told you that Gates was the guy that I thought was going to be the surprise in a good sense after that Tennessee game.
That was at the season started. Last week, you ripped him.
He's horrible. I'm just going to say
let's
that.
Let's have some ground rules here.
Okay.
why I'm here.
Okay.
We don't talk about individuals. Players, coaches.
Okay.
How about
in
that?
General?
Well, I saw all the questions. No,
in
well,
general, okay. Turn hold off on. My,
okay, let's pretend like I left.
In general, I feel like
footsteps. And I'll just turn off the mic and let you guys rock and roll.
You want me to turn your mic off?
Yeah,
no.
Go ahead. Well, I just nice. Want to put this down because I don't want any part of this stuff.
I will be nice. I will be nice. In general,
you're not mad at me, are you? Because I promised you it'd be.
No. You said it was going to be. But, it's kind of humane, but I'm like, I can't.
I don't blame you.
I'm the worst one. It's not you, Travis. It's me. But I'm a former player, so I can say it.
I know, but
I'm a former.
Seat's not even cold yet.
Okay.
I am a former Nebraska left tackle. I can say it. I'm disappointed in his performance this year. I'm also disappointed in what I perceive to be a lack of overall physical development among players. And when I look at guys like Hymus and Decker, who are a true freshman and a redshirt sophomore, and I see more physical development amongst them than I do amongst fourth-year juniors and fifth-year seniors, there is a across-the-board cultural problem within the program. When I was down there, there were nights, and I say nights because it was at nighttime, where we would literally nearly come to fist fights with the strength and conditioning staff because they wanted to close the weight room and we would refuse to leave. I guarantee you that problem is not happening down in Lincoln right now, and that in and of itself is a problem.
All right, Rich comes in with two questions this week. Says, I'll be in Omaha in a couple weeks. Need to know what stores sell infusion beer. Hy-Vee sells infusion beer. Beertopia sells infusion beer. But the best place to get infusion beer is go to Infusion Brewing.
Go to Infusion, get it straight off the tap.
Yeah, so and they also sell cans and bottles at the Benson location or the Southwest Omaha location.
And you've got some food options as well, too.
No.
Go up to Benson, they'll bring the
very
pizza.
Very limited food options, but you can get like the grain pizza I think they have. But you can, I believe you can bring food in, too, which is
pretty
cool.
That's what I was saying is they'll bring the pizza in, too. You can order it into there.
But, yeah, just go to Infusion Brewing, two locations in the Omaha area, and try all their beers. Get the beer sampler. It's really good. So here's the real question. What's the deal with the special teams on field goals and extra points? No effort is made to block the kick. Players just stand around, and most don't even put their arms up.
Some of it, I think, is a little bit of a fear that's been created by some of the new rule changes that have come up. And I think guys have... You want to block, but I think some of it does come from the fact that you used to be able to just completely tee off on the offensive lineman. I think two out of every three concussions I ever had as a football player came on PAT and field goal attempts from D linemen just being able to tee off on you. That's all illegal now, and I think that leads to part of it. Some of it is, though, I think it is a little bit of a style thing in terms of what are you going to go after? What are you going to risk having a penalty on? What are you going to risk getting a guy hurt on? And I think some coaches have a little bit of a sacrificial lamb effort-wise, and I think PAT and field goal rush is one of them for this staff.
All right, Ben in Ohio has a medical question, and maybe both of you can chime in on this. I've always wondered, when a player like Trey Bryant has surgery, does he pay for it or does the team? Now, you both have had surgeries. Who pays for your surgery?
The university or the athletic department covers the costs.
Okay, that's very simple. So, but it has to happen while you're playing, right? I mean, if he was like walking on campus and got hurt, then your parents...
I don't know. I got to be honest. That never really happened because I'm thinking about, say, situations. Take like Tommy Frazier, for instance, where it's you've got kind of this blood disorder, this coagulopathy that led to the blood clots. Now, granted, football puts you at a much higher risk when you're in that situation, but it's not like football had anything to do to cause it. I could be wrong. I might be completely wrong here. I was under the assumption that the athletic department covered those medical costs for him while he was in school.
Okay. That's cool. All right. Then TJ wants to know, what's going on with the D-line? I thought Perella was supposed to sort them all out. There's seriously no pass rush, and we're getting gashed for lots of run yardage. So is Perella the issue? Talent the issue? Diaco on your heels and Reed, we never blitz issue? Or heart effort the issue?
I think some of it is just a talent that he had to work with when he hit the door. Now, you look at some of the young guys. You look at, like, Devontae. I mean, they've got some young guys who I think are going to be really good. I think the scheme is an issue, not in terms of the scheme itself being bad. Again, I will say it time and time again. I don't necessarily have a problem with a 5-2 or 3-4 style of defense if you run it well and you know how to run it. But I think a lot of these guys are still – it takes a while to really learn the defense.
Well, you know, I was at this restaurant yesterday with some really smart football guys, and I heard him talking about the 3-4.
What did Felice say?
Well, I kind of agreed with what he said. I mean, maybe right now they don't have the talent to run or the right guys to run that defense. So we started talking about, you know, if you had Sue – and some of those guys that towards the end of Pelini's year, the first part of Pelini's year, is probably some Callahan players, they might have been the ideal guys to run that defense.
I mean, I think if you've got like a Danny Noonan or a Rich Glover to stick in there at nose guard, yeah.
And that's what they said the nose guard was the big...
I think that's the key thing. You know, we were talking with Dave here before the podcast that... You know, one of the key things also is those outside linebacker / rush in positions. And you think about the guys that Osborne had and McBride had for the better part of 20 years, that McBride ran this same type of defense. And they had guys that were really, really good at that outside linebacker rush in position. They also had some really incredible defensive tackles. I mean, you think about guys like Jim Scow and Tim Rother and you look Joe Sims, Willie Griffin, Kent Wells. I mean, there were some really, really good defensive linemen that McBride had over the course of his career. And these are guys that were all playing in a 3-4 style of defense. I mean, this is all pre-switch to the 4-3. I mean, you start going into the 4-3 guys, and it becomes sort of rush-in city. All of a sudden, it's Dante Jones and Jared Tomich and Grant Wistrom and...
Pretty good players right there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty, very, very impressive group of guys. But I think you've got to have, I mean, if you're running a 4-3, you need two really good interior defensive linemen. If you're running a 3-4, you need three really good interior linemen. And so you need more talent. You need more guys who can play interior, and that's not an easy thing. Think about the whole time Pelini and Riley, I mean, with Banker, ran a 4-3. There were times they had trouble finding two really good interior defensive linemen. And if you lost one of them, I mean, think about when, say, like Jared Crick got injured when Pelini was the coach. God, it just completely hamstrung the defense. Yeah. That you lost one interior D lineman at a hunt. It kind of hamstrung everything because that was you really only had one great one when he was a senior. Well, now you need three guys that are great, not just two. You need three for that defense to work, and I think it makes it a little more difficult.
We got a question coming in from Dave. If Riley happens to get another year, will he get rid of Kavanaugh?
I've been asked that question a lot.
What do you think he should do?
Now I'm like Dave. I'm almost uncomfortable. the should might be a whole nother ball game of a question here.
Yes or no?
Will he? I don't think he does.
Okay. Will and should are two different things. But he asked will, and you said no.
Yeah.
Andy in Kansas, this is how I know a lot of people listen to this podcast. It started with Dave earlier in the week, and then I think every email I got this week said, first of all, thank you, Travio. Everybody's calling me
Travio.
Travio now.
Travio.
Everybody's calling me Travio.
Let's talk about Italy. Total Tuscany, baby. Let's, a lot easier subject than this.
How was the food?
The food was outstanding. You know, a lot of people don't know Tuscany is really known for its beef. And to beef or not to beef, and look up at Dario Cecchini because it's a great restaurant. And we closed our tour there with an 8-course meat meal. It was all 8 courses of meat. Started with beef tartare, and then you ended with the bistecca Florentine, which is a very rare T-bone. So, I mean, most Nebraskans would love Tuscany because there's a lot of meat. But the pasta was good. The everything was really good. But now I've got everybody calling me Travio.
Tell me about the olive oil.
I like that hat.
I'm a big.
Where'd you get that hat?
I actually got that hat in Capri because it was like 90 degrees and my bald head was just getting fried. I'm like, I've got to get a hat.
I was waiting for the scarf. You know, the old, you know, the hat and the scarf. You look like a total.
It was actually the weather was unseasonably warm when we were there, so we got pretty lucky. Olive oil. They were just starting to pick, Rob, and the fresh olive oil is amazing. Absolutely amazing. I love olive oil.
See, my problem is if I ever went to Tuscany,
yeah,
I wouldn't leave.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd go find a good socialized medicine job, and I'd never leave.
Yeah, we've been following your tweets. I don't think you're that much into socialized medicine.
I'm really not. I'll go to Italy, though, and they'll pay me nothing to provide poor medical care like they do at all socialized companies.
Did you notice how soon as we start talking about traveling, Dave just perks right up?
Well,
Dave's right back.
I can't get in trouble by that, talking about traveling.
Have you ever been to Tuscany? Because I know you've been to Venice.
No,
but
I have. You know, I have been to Tuscany. I've been to Florence. That's considered Tuscany. Right?
I'm just talking to the microphone. That helped me out.
Okay, yeah.
There we go.
I've been hiding out all the podcast here. I mean, my seat's still warm over there at the AD office. I don't know about this.
Was that office too big? I remember Tom said it was always way too big because I never quite understood
it. It was ginormous. That thing was ginormous. I didn't even sit in this.
Did you have your own restroom in there?
Yeah. Shower, restroom, changing room. I'm telling you.
Do you remember?
You know what the one thing I hated about it, I had to wear a suit every day. I'm a flip-flop.
Why?
Well, because I thought I better, you know. I thought, well, like, I come in with this black jacket. It's not going to cut it, you know. So I just.
Because besides the Remington Trophy presentation where you'd wear a tux,
mm-hmm.
I've never seen you in a suit. And then I saw you in these suits. I'm like,
I know.
Man.
I have them, but I just don't like to wear them.
Do you remember Devaney's old office? South Stadium, first floor.
It was
like
small.
It was like across the street, across the street, across the hall
from the N Club.
Yeah, from that N Club, the media lounge. Uh-huh. It was like the. It was like a desk on one side, a filing cabinet on the other. And that was.
It had a balcony. It was set up.
Oh man!
But it was just too nice for me. I don't need anything that nice. put me in a broom closet. I don't need
it. Did you stay at the Embassy Suites when you were down there? Is that where they put you up? Where they
initially, yeah.
Initially?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, all right. We're going to go back to questions now.
Okay. Back to football.
Rob, in the last podcast, you said Diaco is not a good 3-4 defensive coach. I did not go back and listen to the previous podcast, but I thought in the first few, you said that he had nothing but good things to say about him bringing the 3-4 to Nebraska.
No, I've got nothing against the 3-4. Now, a lot of people have made the argument that there's a schematic problem. I do not necessarily feel that there's a problem with the 3-4 versus the 4-3. And it's all in how you use it. Like I said, I've made the point time and time again. McBride was a 3-4 guy or a 5-2 guy. It's kind of functionally, it's kind of the same for the better part of 20 years. And then he kind of realized, hey, if we're going to shut down Miami and Florida State, maybe we ought to get a little bit better at stopping these pro style passing offenses with Florida talent. And he kind of played around a little bit more with his nickel and dime defense. And his nickel defense was basically a 4-3 where one of the linebackers was the fifth defensive back, was sort of a big safety. But he was shocked that when he had this nickel defense in and a team would try and run against it, they'd completely shut down the run. And that was when they kind of started talking, well, crap, maybe we're putting a whole bunch of really, really fast guys on the field with this 4-3. Maybe we ought to just leave it alone and make that our base defense. and thus Nebraska's 4-3 was born. And here's the thing. McBride discovered he was a better 4-3 coach than he was a 3-4 coach. I think he was very good at coaching a 3-4, but I think once he ran a 4-3, he himself realized, crap, I should have been doing this for 20 years. When you look at Diaco, again, if I said Diaco was a great 3-4 coach, I guess the point that I would make is that from a track record standpoint, coming to Lincoln, you had a guy in Mark Banker who, yeah, he's been doing this a long time, but Mark Banker's never had a lot of success as a defensive coordinator. Statistically, he's kind of, as a D coordinator, what Mike Riley is as a head coach. He's kind of one of those guys, he's pretty good, he's not great, he's maybe a little better than 500. And that's Mike Riley as a head coach. That's Mark Banker as a defensive coordinator. His numbers are very nice, middle of the road. Most of his defenses are kind of like 40th to 60th in the country in terms of where they've ranked on average over the course of his career.
Another defensive question that comes from Andy in Kansas.
But, well, hold on. Let me finish. Diaco had a track record.
Notre
when
Dame,
you look at what he did at Cincy and Notre Dame, he had very good defenses. He had some very solid defenses with good but maybe not great athletes at Cincinnati. And he had some excellent defenses with some very good athletes at Notre Dame. The track record was there with him in the 3-4. And that's kind of the point I was trying to make. I'm not trying to say he's a great coach, he's a great defensive coach. I'm saying there was a track record of success with him where there maybe not necessarily was with Banker.
All right, the other defensive question from Andy in Kansas City is, why have our corners played so far out the wide receiver? It seems they are at least giving them a 7-8 yard cushion. I understand not wanting to give up the big play, but I think that really hurt us in the first four games this year.
I agree. I think it did hurt him a bit. Although they didn't give up they did give up some big plays. I think a lot of it's the fact you look at who we had going into the season, and due to a lot of injuries, spring ball, summer workouts, and especially two-a-days, the defensive back spot was between safety and corner was absolutely depleted going into this season. They really did have a lot of injuries going into the season. You've got some young guys. You've got some more inexperienced guys playing at those corner spots. And it's not necessarily a trust issue on the coach's part, but it's one of those things that if you've got some guys who haven't been tested, haven't been proven yet, you don't want to completely isolate them and just get them burnt. Now, at some point, they've got to put some trust in those guys. But it's one of these things where when you've got some younger, inexperienced guys like that, you basically do have to tell them, hey, you got to keep everything in front of you.
So if you have a question for Dr. Rob, we'll try to get him answered on the next Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. All you have to do is send him to doctalksports@gmail.com. That's doctalksports@gmail.com. Also, reach out to Dr. Rob on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Dave Remington, before you head out of here, you're heading back on Thursday of this week. When are you coming back? What do you see yourself?
Well, I might be back November 11th. Jerry Cahill, who's a good friend of mine in cystic fibrosis, he's got his documentary being shown down at the Field of Streams. I forgot
what's
Field,
the, or the Film Streams.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. He'll be down there. I think pretty early in the morning on Saturday. So it's the 11th, I believe.
Yeah, he does a lot of podcasting and stuff too.
Yeah, he does podcasting. Yeah. I started in podcasting way before. I was doing podcasts probably about 10 years ago, 11 years ago. So the Podfather, that's what they used to call me.
Well, I just let you know, we only do this once a week. We only do it during the season, but last month we had 60,000 listeners.
I know. You guys are lighting it up. I like it.
Well, you know what? You're the one who believed in it. I mean, we probably wouldn't be doing this.
I know quality when I see it.
Oh, man. But, hey, I know some of those listener emails put you in a tough spot, but we do appreciate you coming in.
I always have a blast with you guys, and I wish I could answer some of these questions. I just don't, I'm too close to it.
No,
right,
and
now.
I totally understand. But I think I speak for everybody that, I think people were happy, genuinely happy that you were back. I think they appreciated that you were a calming voice for 21 days. And I think it let them see a side of you that they maybe didn't know or maybe forgotten about. And mm-hmm. I think I speak for everybody who follows the program that I don't think they would have had anybody else.
I had an absolute blast. Like I said, Chancellor Green and President Bounds treated me very well, and they believed in me. And I, you know, I'm just trying to do the best I can, you know, when I was there and still when I'm gone. I'm just trying to hang in there, buddy.
See, he's got a career on the backside of the Boomer Esiason Foundation that he's thinking about. So travel safe home. We hope to see you on November 11th when you're back in town. And, of course, we'll see you, of course, at the Remington Trophy presentation January 13th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. For your tickets, go to remingtontrophy.com. He's Dave Remington. He's Dr. Rob Sanniston. Hope you enjoyed the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. We'll be back next week with another full episode coming off the Purdue game. Also, I want to thank HuskerMax.com for distributing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Check out the video. Like it. All sorts of stuff. HuskerMax.com, where you need 24/7, 365 Husker news. It's right there, HuskerMax.com. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.